It's Todd Zwillick with you. Welcome back to The Takeaway. In November 2001, Kunduz, Afghanistan, became the last major city in the north of that country to fall to the U.S.-backed Northern Alliance. It was the Taliban's last stand. But nearly 14 years later, the city is in play once again. The Taliban captured Kunduz on Monday evening, and government forces have spent the week trying to retake that city on the Afghan border with Tajikistan.
We want the government to secure Kunduz. The situation was not good in the city, so I managed to escape. But still some of my family are trapped there. We don't want anything else from government. We just want to secure Kunduz.
A Kunduz resident there speaking with Reuters. Sarah Chase covered the fall of the Taliban in 2001 as a reporter for National Public Radio. She decided to stay in the country and left journalism for civil service. She was an advisor to the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. Today, she is senior associate at the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace. Sarah is also author of Thieves of State, Why Corruption Threatens Global Security. And she joins me now from Paris. Sarah Chase, welcome.
Thank you.
Ashraf Ghani, the president in Afghanistan, has been in power for about a year and has been trying to stand up a unity government. He's been criticized for a great deal of dysfunction, and I was hoping you could tell us about the interaction of that dysfunction with what we're seeing in Kunduz now.
I think that's a great question because, unfortunately, most of the coverage of this Kunduz event has focused down on sort of the military tactics and whether there are enough security forces or whether the U.S. should be pulling out of Afghanistan on the pace that it has decided to do so, whereas fundamentally what underlies events like this really has to do with the way the country or even the locality is governed. So there, I think there are a number of factors that contribute to the crisis that we're seeing today. One is, as you suggest, the really dysfunctional aspect of Afghanistan's national government. The notion was, after a quite fraudulent and contested election, that there should be somehow a sharing out of the pie, if you will, of Afghanistan among the two contesting forces. And so under quite a bit of U.S. pressure, a kind of, quote, national unity government was created, which involved a chief executive officer. It's like, you know, I mean, he's not called a prime minister, but you've got a president and you've got a dual executive government held by two bitterly rival individuals and groups of Afghans. And the notion that by calling this unity, you would get unity really is remarkable. And so what you've had for the past year is a government without a cabinet, and you've had the appointment of local officials, including, for example, the governor of Kunduz province, in an incredibly contested fashion. So President Ghani basically announced the wholesale dismissal of most of the provincial government of Kunduz province and appointed a governor known to be very loyal to him. In a province that is as ethnically divided and factionally divided as the province of Kunduz, that type of approach was almost guaranteed to create disaffection and discontent.
So then it seems like the phenomenon of the Taliban roaring back into a place like Kunduz is really just a reminder, a symptom, if you want, of just how bad things are in Kabul and the inability of the central government to deal with the fringes of the country.
It is. And I would also say that it reveals some longer-standing wrong-headed policies on the part of the international intervention. Back in about 2009, a great idea emerged, largely copied from Iraq, that what should happen in Afghanistan should be the development of local militias to fight against the Taliban. And so the notion was, because we have a poorly organized and disciplined and trained army and an even more poorly organized and trained and disciplined national police, the antidote to that would be to have a yet less disciplined and supervised and organized set of local militias. And this project was expanded into Kunduz province in 2011. And the result was a patchwork of local militias that did not enjoy significant training, were not loyal to the people of Kunduz province as a whole, let alone to the government of Afghanistan, but rather were largely loyal to local strongmen. Their existence and training and equipping by the U.S. Government had the impact of reinforcing precisely those kind of local strongmen. And so what happened there, as happened in southern Afghanistan, where I was living, is that those local militias started preying upon the local population. They would shake them down for, you know, some of their crops that they were trying to take for market. They would shake them down for money. They would arbitrarily imprison them, et cetera, et cetera. Sometimes in Kandahar, anyway, they got involved in land grabs. And so these, quote, anti-Taliban militias ended up really making the population even more indignant, less trustful of the government, because these were seen as, you know, sort of government proxies, and therefore more susceptible to either joining or sympathizing with the Taliban, or at least not putting up any resistance to the Taliban, because they didn't see Taliban exactions as being particularly worse than these so-called government militia exactions.
Sarah Chase, she's author of Thieves of State, Why Corruption Threatens Global Security. She's also senior associate at the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace. Sarah, thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Todd.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.